This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Our political analysis team is back. James Madison University public policy guru Bob Roberts, McClatchy News Service White House correspondent Anita Kumar, and Sorensen Institute chief Bob Gibson. They've got plenty of news worth discussing. Our first governor to ever face prison got a lighter sentence than most expected, but should he be able to stay out of jail during appeal? General Assembly in its new session, lots of issues there, including what to do about a man in jail who's been reelected to the House of Delegates. Also, big economic challenges for Virginia have state lawmakers scrambling, and completely unrelated, maybe, might advocates for medical marijuana actually be persuading some legislators this time around? Speaking of persuasion attempts, president's calling for more taxes on the rich. A tune we've heard before? Any chance it'll catch on this time? Your thoughts on anything political will be welcome right after the news. So great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Anything political up for discussion this hour. And if you've got a topic about which you'd be willing to share an opinion or get some expert analysis, we want to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, 888-967-2825. Speaking of expert, we've got the A-team together once again. Political scientist Bob Roberts, Sorensen Institute leader Bob Gibson, and the former Virginia political reporter who now covers the world as a White House correspondent, Anita Kumar. Welcome all.
Thank you. Good to join you.
And one of the reasons we're extra thrilled is for the first time ever, as part of one of these panels that we've been doing for years now, we actually have Anita in front of a microphone in her hometown in Charlottesville. She was here for the weekend and she decided to stay over so that she could be in the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, where Bob Gibson also is seated. And I'm in Charlottesville with them. So we have three people actually making eye contact. And then Bob Roberts is all by himself at the WMRA's talk studio in
Harrisonburg. It's lonely over here.
But I'm sure that we're going to manage, and Bob is just going to join in every once in a while. A bit later in the hour, we do hope, by the way, to hear from some folks working on specific issues in the recently begun 2015 session of Virginia's General Assembly. But let me toss to the three of you first. What do you see as the big challenge before state lawmakers at this point in time?
I think one of the challenges is how much gridlock they're going to engage in, because they have Republican control now of the Virginia Senate, 21-19, Republican control by heavy numbers in the House of Delegates, and a Democrat in the governor's mansion. So there is an option for them to cooperate on those things in which they can agree to cooperate on, or there's the option of playing politics, because all 140 seats in the General Assembly, 40 in the Senate and 100 in the House, are going to be on the ballot in Virginia this fall. So they have the opportunity to put forward bills that they know have no chance of passage, or would be vetoed, or would be something that are just campaign bills. And there are always a number of those. There's a question of how many of those this session will bog down on or gridlock on, and there's a question of how much they can agree to cooperate on for education, for ethics reform, which is going to be a big topic for them to consider.
Thank you. Former political reporter Bob Gibson, now head of the Sorensen Institute, now former Virginia political reporter Anita Kumar. Cooperation or playing politics?
I don't know if they have Washington.
Really? You're going to say you don't know after all those years you spent in the state capital?
Well, let's see. It's going to be pretty hard for them to get anything done. It's the same thing that's happening in Washington. They're trying to figure out what to do with a Republican Congress and a Democratic president, and it's pretty tough. And so far, they haven't really gotten anywhere there. So,
are there any issues that you think that these people that you used to track in the state capital might actually, on both sides of the political divide, agree upon?
Sounds like they want to do something on ethics reform, finally. Now that the former governor looks like he's going to prison, it sounds like they actually agree on it and are trying to one-up each other on how much they're going to do on ethics reform. And I don't think they did very much last year, so that would be significant. Virginia needs to, you know, has long looked at changing the laws and nothing has really happened.
I agree. And stemming sexual violence, fighting sexual violence at universities across the state will be another area of concern for this General Assembly, because there are a number of bills in that would take away from the universities the handling of some of these felony cases and make sure that they get to police and prosecutors. And that would be a big change.
Bob Roberts.
It's interesting. The Republicans today made clear that they wanted to, in a sense, appeal to taxpayers. They're going to make government more efficient, less expensive. For example, for some reason, they're going after universities who are imposing higher fees for athletics. Republicans are proposing to put a cap on that so universities cannot raise fees.
And this is something of a surprise. This just came out this morning. Republicans held a press conference saying what their priorities were going to be for this session.
Right. Now, this was at the top of their list, which is very appealing to parents who are sending their children to college. And they really would prefer not to be paying these high fees for athletics and other programs. On the other hand, universities such as ODU, JMU, and a number of other public universities depend very heavily on these fees to finance their athletic programs, which they think are vital to attracting students and alumni. So that's going to be a very, very interesting fight. In other words, if it gets through the House of Delegates and the Senate, what will the governor do? In other words, will he view this as micromanaging colleges and those issues should be left to the Board of Visitors, or should the legislature intervene? So that's a potential really nasty battle brewing in the legislature.
And the legislature has intervened at times on the tuition question. So the colleges and universities facing the option of not raising tuition as much as perhaps they might like to for the revenue they think they need can turn to fees. And athletic fees are one of the easier fees to increase at some of these schools. And you're right, Bob, at JMU and ODU, these are very expensive additions to the tuition paid by parents.
Well, we just learned this afternoon that the current governor is, in fact, suffering from what I guess could be called a kind of sports injury. Anita, what can you tell us about why Terry McAuliffe was hospitalized this afternoon?
Sure. He was hospitalized today in Richmond. His office announced that he had traveled to Africa over Christmas break, the holidays, and he was on a safari and he was thrown off a horse and suffered 7 broken ribs. And so I guess he's had 7 broken ribs for a few weeks and no one really knew and he hadn't really told anyone. But there was fluid around his lungs, the doctor discovered today, so they've put him in the hospital for about 3 days to have some kind of procedure to alleviate that fluid.
So he was in Tanzania visiting his daughter who was working there?
He was in Tanzania for the safari. I think she actually is in Zambia where she's working on an agricultural project.
So this was something of a family holiday over the Christmas break. I don't think anybody in the news media knew about this, may not have even known much about the trip. I take it they didn't want it publicized because it advertises the fact that we have a very wealthy governor who can afford to do these kind of things?
The governor's office said today when I asked that they didn't put on a schedule. It wasn't public. It was a private event and they never do that. This has been going on for years in Richmond, the question of what to put on the governor's schedule and what not. And I, when I was there with Governor Kane, it was the same kind of issue when he was the chair of the Democratic National Committee. What's public, what's not public. So they didn't put on the schedule. I believe he did tell in an end of the year interview, did tell the Richmond Times-Dispatch that he had been to Africa, so it was prior to the new year.
But he didn't say anything about an injury. So
no,
that just came out today when he was hospitalized.
Right.
And so for 2 weeks or so, he's had 7 broken ribs, and we don't know whether he knew that he had.
Well, no.
He was seen by a doctor in Africa.
He knew. He was seen by a doctor in Tanzania who diagnosed it, but they said it should just repair itself on its own. But then they discovered some problem today. But it's interesting because he gave his huge, you know, annual State of the Commonwealth address Wednesday night. Had to stand there.
6 nights ago, we were watching him on television, and he didn't look like he was in any great pain.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that in a moment, but just remind us of the prognosis. Governor admitted to VCU Medical Center in Richmond. Expected to be there for a couple of days?
2 to 3 days, they're saying.
And mostly at this point, the reason for hospitalization is because of the fluid
around his lungs. It was clear. It's pretty clear, though, that the members of the General Assembly, the leaders in the House and Senate, did not were not notified that he had gone to Africa, or I don't even think realized that he had had an injury.
So with us at the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, political journalist and McClatchy News Service White House correspondent Anita Kumar, plus former political journalist, now head of the Sorenson Institute, Bob Gibson, and joining in from the Insight Studio at WMRA, James Madison University political scientist Bob Roberts. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And if you have anything political you'd like to discuss or question you want to ask, phone number easy to remember is 888-WMRA. Talk in all numbers 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Bob Gibson, you were mentioning the governor standing up for hours at a time giving the State of the Commonwealth address this past Wednesday. Besides the fact that he wasn't showing any obvious pain, what was he saying?
Well, he looked to be in good spirits. He started his talk with the areas of agreement where he and the Democrats and the Republicans in the Assembly have largely agreed on, and that would be no cuts to education in the current two-year budget. That continues through the next year. They have agreed on some economic development measures. He talked about recruiting 267 economic development gets to Virginia, new jobs for people who are going to be employed by firms that are either expanding or moving to Virginia. He talked about firms moving their international and national headquarters here, that sort of thing. That's very non-controversial. Then he got into the controversial stuff in the second half of his talk, where he talked about issues that Democrats are going to be campaigning on as they approach the November elections.
And they have no chance of passage in this General Assembly session.
Many of them would not have a chance because the Republicans control the Senate narrowly, 21-19, and the House by 68-32. So it's a big mountain to overcome if it's viewed as a partisan bill. And nonpartisan cooperation, bipartisan cooperation is present on some issues, but not on these issues that people campaign on, largely.
And some of those issues that he mentioned, gun control being one of them.
He wants to reintroduce the one-gun-a-month restriction, one-handgun-a-month purchase restriction that Governor Doug Wilder introduced and was recently discontinued during the last governor's administration. And he wants to, of course, increase those on Medicaid through Obamacare, and that's not going to pass in the General Assembly despite his best attempts to push it. It's clear that that's a campaign issue, not one that's going to pass. There are a number of issues. Gay marriage, he wants to have Virginia's statutes cleaned up so that it's not a man and a wife, but a man and a spouse or a person and a spouse in the legislation, because that's sort of an economic development issue, making Virginia more friendly to firms that have that kind of nomenclature in there. You know, the friendliness to gay marriage that many of the companies moving to Virginia like to see.
Well, now that same-sex marriage is going to be apparently decided by the U.S. Supreme Court, I want to ask all of you about that recent development. But I have a question for all of you that I also have for anyone listening. So, to you on the other side of your radio, you probably heard that our former governor, Bob McDonnell, sentenced to 2 years in prison for those corruption charges on which he was convicted last year. A much lighter sentence than most people expected. In fact, lighter sentence than was recommended by the body doing the recommendations to the judge. And also some question now of whether or not the governor will get to stay out of jail while his case is on appeal. I'm wondering if you have an opinion on whether or not you think the sentence given to the governor for 2 years in prison was appropriate, whether you think something similar should be given to his wife when she is sentenced next month, and whether you have an opinion on whether or not he should stay out of jail while he's on appeal. So your thoughts on any of those things we'd be pleased to hear, as well as anything else political. Phone number 888-WMRA-TALK translates to 888-967-2825. On Facebook, we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Bob, and Anita will give us their take on what they think should be happening to our former governor when we get back in just a bit more than 1 minute. Bob Roberts is a professor of politics and a professor of public policy at James Madison University. Bob Gibson reported on politics at the Charlottesville Daily Progress for many years before taking his current post as executive director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership. Anita Kumar covered Virginia politics for the Washington Post for a number of years, but these days she's focused on national and international news in her current role as White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Bob Roberts, you first. How'd you feel about the governor's sentence?
Oh, I thought it was about
the
right.
The former governor,
I thought
Bob
McDonnell. About right. The prosecutors had offered him 2 years. They were willing to give him a plea deal. He didn't take it. The mail fraud and wire fraud statute they're dealing with is ambiguous at the least. And this official acts issue is a legitimate legal issue that if it gets to the Supreme Court, he might win. And therefore, giving him 2 years creates a scenario. If he goes in 2 years, it's unlikely that the case will be reviewed within 2 years. He's out, reduces the likelihood of an appeal. It works well for everyone. You get the 2 years. The statute's ambiguous, and maybe it goes away.
I don't know if it works well for the former governor.
It doesn't work well for the former governor. I don't say it works well for the former governor.
You said for everyone.
Whatever. He could have gotten a lot worse. In other words,
he could have.
He
and
could.
The sentencing guidelines, which used to be mandatory,
right.
would have given him 5.5 to 8.
That's right.
Somewhere around 6 years at least. And those were not mandatory. And in 30% of the cases, judges deviate from those standards and state why they're going higher or lower, in this case lower. And the judge in this case explained that he thought that it was appropriate to go much lower, down to 2 years, which means that Bob McDonnell, if he goes in on February 9th, as expected, will have a 20-month federal prison sentence anticipated.
Back up for us, if you would, Bob Gibson. You think the governor is going to go behind bars on February 9th?
I think the judge has made that clear, and his appeal would be to the Fourth Circuit, which is unlikely, I think, to change.
He is appealing, though. But.
He has appealed to the Fourth Circuit, his ability to stay in. He wants to get out during appeal.
And weren't there something like six former Virginia attorneys general who've come down on the former governor's side saying he should stay free during appeal?
Yeah, and I actually thought there was a chance he would stay free, but the judge said that he should go February 9th. I think it's going to be hard.
Well, I think the judge normally does not let people go on appeal.
Right.
So it would be unusual for him to get out on appeal.
Now, remember,
and let me just make sure that I'm clear on this. Right. It was the Federal Sentencing Commission that recommended to this federal judge that former Governor Bob McDonnell be sentenced to 10 years in prison?
Well, that was the judge. The judge then redefined the criteria that were fed into that formula for determining the range of sentence, and he defined it down to 6 to 8 years, basically.
Right.
And then said, I'm going to deviate from that and go down.
His comments, the judge's comments, were very interesting. I mean, he really explained why he did a lighter sentence. And he said he appreciated the McDonald's service in the military, that he was a religious man, that he was convinced or at least moved by some of the 400-plus letters he had received from supporters, friends, people saying that the governor had done good things.
And you've read most of those letters. What struck you about those letters?
Actually, what struck me, I knew a lot of the letter writers. There are a lot of people that you would think, legislators, friends, family members. There were a lot of letters that talked about things that hadn't come out into the public eye. So things, you know, I covered Governor McDonald, but it was things I didn't know about. Things he, small or larger, acts of kindness that he had done over time, which was a lot of what the letters were, that people didn't know about, that you hadn't heard
about.
And former Democratic Governor Tim Kaine was among the letter writers, and I think one of the things that he pointed out was that in McDonald's administration, he did more than any previous governor, including Kaine, to reinstitute the rights of people who had served in prison
for felonies.
And make it so that they were able to be full citizens.
He restored rights for more than 8,000 Virginians who had been convicted of a felony and their parents.
But the
judge was also very, very emphatic that he disagreed with the governor's strategy of blaming everything on his wife.
Agreed.
And a lot of those letters, and I found particularly bad, was the fact that he allowed his children to write letters to the judge, basically blaming it on their mother. I mean, that was not necessary. He had plenty of other letters to basically make the case. And the judge was not happy with that. The judge was not happy.
I actually thought the letters that were harmful were the ones that said he didn't. I disagree with the jury's verdict.
Right.
Now is not the time to say that. Right. Now is the time to say the jury has decided. Here's what I think you should do on sentencing. There were so many people that still disagree,
right,
that said he's innocent and that they shouldn't have done this. And I don't think the judge wants to hear that.
No, the judge does not.
So what about Maureen McDonald when her sentencing comes up?
I don't think she'll get any jail time.
I think it'll be very, very small or none.
No. I think she'll get up to a year.
Yeah. I don't.
So February 20th is her sentence.
Right.
So the judge is not buying the defense's argument. Both the former first lady's attorneys and the former governor's attorney's argument that this mostly was at her initiation.
No.
He had a great line, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was something like
the judge.
The judge. Remember this line? He let the. Was he called the snake?
Yeah.
He talked about Johnny Williams,
right,
the guy at the center of this thing. He let the
into the garden or into the office.
Into the house.
Yeah.
But she did. The first lady did, a former first lady. But the governor allowed him to be involved in his own personal
business affairs.
He said it much better than that.
Yeah, he had three biblical references. He has a theology degree in addition to a law degree from Harvard. So this judge knows his Bible.
Yeah.
Our analysis panel today on Virginia Insight, Bob Gibson, executive director of the Sorensen Institute, White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar, and from the James Madison University Politics and Public Administration Departments, Bob Roberts. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. And as always, we're willing to go in circles. So if something has been mentioned and we have since moved on, but you have a question or comment about what happened before, we're happy to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. If there's a topic we have not yet gotten to that you'd like us to, 888-967-2825 is that phone number in all numbers. And on Facebook, you can post to us where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Let's talk about the Supreme Court and same-sex marriage. What's going on there?
There's going to be an argument before the U.S. Supreme Court in April and a decision for the remaining 14 states that do not allow gay marriage in the country by June, the first week or so of June. So it's going to be decided, 36 states already have gay marriage, thanks to the federal court circuits that have allowed gay marriage in those 36 states.
The court just the level of federal court just below Supreme Court.
Correct. Yes. And those circuits unanimously, until the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati ruled the other way, had said the states have to allow gay marriage. Well, the Sixth Circuit, which stretches from Tennessee up to Ohio, basically said, no, we believe that the states have the right to protect marriage being between a man and a woman. So that made it an issue that the circuits disagreed on, and the Supreme Court finally decided to hear the case on its merits based on that. But with 14 states remaining as the outliers, I think it is fairly clear from the court's rulings thus far, and certainly from the precedents in the circuits around the country, with the exception of the Sixth in Cincinnati, that the Supreme Court is likely to extend this right beyond the 36 states that already have gay marriage.
It just depends upon Justice Kennedy. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Is he going to continue his line of cases, or will he defer to the states, basically saying this is a state's rights issue and let it be fought out at the state? I don't know what he's going to do, and I don't think we can just assume he's going to be consistent with his position. He'll go ahead and say equal protection clause prohibits this, and we have gay marriage in all the states. But he still could say it's a state's rights issue and let the states fight it out.
So if you're listening, have an insight on that topic or anything else, again, phone number easy to remember is 888-WMRA-TALK. But we're going next to Stanton, and Melissa, I believe, has an issue that we have not gotten to yet. Melissa, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Bob, and Anita, please.
Oh, hi. I was calling in to bring up the issue of medical marijuana. I know we have three bills coming before the General Assembly this session in Virginia.
Oh, and I think this is, I recognize your voice. This is Melissa Roden, who was actually with us last summer talking about one of the challenges for your daughter, who, if I recall correctly, has a has a seizure syndrome called Dravet syndrome.
That's correct.
That if you lived in other parts of the country, she could be treated with medical marijuana, which is found to be quite efficacious for treating this kind of seizure disorder for children.
Correct.
So you're part of an organization that's pushing for changing the law in Virginia about allowing marijuana to be used as medicine.
Correct.
It's an issue that the General Assembly will pay some attention to. There are some bills in. Delegate Ken Plum of Reston, Delegate Dave Albo of Springfield, also in Fairfax County, have bills that would allow physicians to write letters of recommendation, and as opposed to prescriptions that the federal government now will not allow these physicians to write, that would give sufferers of certain diseases the ability to have medical marijuana. And it is a bipartisan issue. It's an issue that has finally gained some support, despite the fact that the other bills that would decriminalize marijuana have gained very little traction in the General Assembly. This is an issue that's gained some traction.
Yeah, and
Bob Gibson, I think I've heard from you in the past that Virginia was actually the first state to allow a kind of medical marijuana, but in practical terms, it just didn't work.
It didn't work because the physicians couldn't prescribe
right.
it. The federal law basically prohibited the doctors from issuing the prescriptions.
So
Virginia
while
it was on the books in Virginia, they couldn't take advantage of it because the doctors couldn't prescribe the marijuana.
So what Virginia did was to allow somebody to get marijuana prescribed to them by a doctor, but the doctors wouldn't prescribe.
They would be subject to penalties, federal law penalties, if they did so. So these bills take away that harsh federal oversight and allow the physicians to recommend marijuana for certain patients.
Without writing an actual prescription.
Without a prescription.
Right. Bob Roberts?
This is interesting. There may be enough Republicans who are more libertarian-minded now who may see a different position on this. So there's a possibility it might get through the General Assembly. I'm not saying it's a strong possibility, but there is a possibility.
I'm actually surprised that Dave Albo had done that. Is this a different bill or the same bill that Harvey Morgan used to bring in every year?
Harvey's was much broader.
Okay.
Harvey's would have allowed much more marijuana prescription getting around
availability. I think every year I was there, a former delegate would bring an older – was he a pharmacist?
He was.
Republican delegate would bring up a bill, and they would mock him. He would get teased about it. So I just am surprised to hear they're actually taking it seriously.
Yeah, they are.
Melissa Roden on the phone line there in Stanton, if I recall correctly, you're part of an organization. Is it called Virginia Parents for Medical Marijuana?
Correct. And we have joined with a national coalition of parents who have severe seizure disorders. We're not seeking recreational use. We're just simply looking to treat our children's seizures with a marijuana oil that's not psychoactive, that has been shown anecdotally and in small studies to control the seizures without getting our children high.
And what have you heard about state lawmakers' responses to your organization's campaign?
They have been, by and large, very supportive. Dave Albo is one of our patrons, and he's been obviously very supportive. He's supporting one of the bills that's going before the session, and there are actually three bills going before session. There's Dave Albo's bill, there's Plum's bill, and then Senator Marston is also putting forth a bill in the General Assembly.
And is the Lieutenant Governor also a supporter?
He is. He's a big supporter. He's, as you know, he's a pediatric neurologist, and he's been extremely supportive. He's done so much help. He's given us so much help and support. I had an opportunity to speak with him in the fall, and I really can't say enough kind things about him. I think the first 20 minutes was not about politics. It wasn't about marijuana. He asked me questions about my daughter, about how she was doing, about, you know, the struggles that we've been facing with her. He's an extraordinarily kind and humble man.
How is your daughter doing?
You know, the syndrome is hard. We've had to add another medication into the mix. It's called Depakote, and it is making her aggressive an extremely attention deficit. And so we're seeing behaviors from her that aren't normal Lucy behaviors. She's biting and hitting, and she's so distracted sometimes she can't even finish a meal. And it's a struggle. It's a struggle. She's still seizing every day.
And some parents, if I recall, are actually moving from Virginia to places like Colorado so that they can get the treatment that they feel would work better for their children.
It's true. A friend of ours moved to Colorado Springs. They got to Colorado Springs just 2 days ago.
Well, we wish you the best of luck, of course, and please do keep us informed on what you find out as this issue makes its way through the General Assembly.
Thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you all.
Our analysis panel today on Virginia Insight, Bob Gibson, Executive Director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, White House Correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar, and from the James Madison University Politics and Public Administration Department's Bob Roberts. I'm Tom Graham. Phone number easy to remember is 888-WMRA-TALK. Bob Roberts, another General Assembly issue, maybe gas taxes. They've now gone up in Virginia?
Yeah, gas taxes went up because the Congress refused to deal with internet taxation. I think they went up about 5 cents per gallon on average. It was a gross receipts tax, so I think that's what worked out. There will be some effort among Republicans led by Bob Marshall, who didn't like the transportation bill, to try to get that repealed. Whether that will be able to work its way through the legislature remains to be seen. It's a very attractive issue during a campaign year to lower taxes. It would put a significant dent in the transportation package if they did it. Therefore, I don't think it's going to get out of the legislature. But there's a possibility it might, and then force the governor to veto it.
And there's a lot of politics involved,
right,
naturally. And Susan Stimson, the Tea Party challenger in the primary,
correct,
this coming spring for Speaker Howell, is hitting Howell over the head
with this
issue.
Yeah.
So I think it's very unlikely for the House to vote to repeal the increase because of the hundreds of millions of dollars involved,
right,
and they'd have to find some more revenue somewhere else, and they're not of a mind to want to do that.
Yeah, but there's a possibility of letting it out, sending it to the governor and forcing him to veto it. Then they blame the governor for it. I mean, if you really want to play Machiavellian politics, and the speaker is willing to take that chance because he's concerned about being defeated in a primary, that you do it. You let it out, and then the governor has to veto it.
Yeah, but that would put Bill Howell on both sides of the gas tax.
I know it would. I know. I'm not saying they're going to do it. I'm just saying it's a thorn within the Republican caucus.
Right.
And the Republican caucus, he'll have to try to hold them together on it, because a lot of the Republican caucus really hated that tax. And so I think the issue is how deft he is at trying to stop that type of rebellion.
Well, as long as we're talking about taxes, the president has some ideas on what he wants to do about taxes, and we just happen to have a White House correspondent with us, so she can give us the latest on that. We got a bunch of other issues to get to, but once again, if you listening have got one, we'd love to hear from you. 888-WMRA-TALK by phone. On Facebook, we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight, and we're going to be back from the break in just a bit more than 60 seconds. Still with us at the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville, political journalist and McClatchy News Service White House correspondent Anita Kumar, plus the head of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, Bob Gibson, and joining in from the Insight Studio at WMRA, James Madison University political scientist Bob Roberts. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. We're just sort of extra thrilled that we have three of us in this studio in Charlottesville who all get to see each other today, because we've never had Anita in front of a microphone. It's always been by phone. But Bob Roberts wasn't able to make the trip from Harrisonburg to Charlottesville, so he's there all by himself. I know we want to talk about taxes and the president, Anita, but do we have to sort of first mention this guy who you know from your days in Richmond?
Are you talking about Delegate Joe Morrissey?
Yeah, okay.
Delegate Joe Morrissey is someone who has been in the news for a long time. He was a prosecutor in Richmond who got his law license taken away and punched out a defense lawyer in a heroin case.
When he was a Commonwealth's attorney.
When he was a Commonwealth's attorney, and this was in court.
Right.
Anita, you covered him.
I did cover him. He's very... He gives a lot of speeches on the floor.
Were you going to say colorful?
I don't know what word. I was trying to think of a good word for him. There is no good word for him. He's very well known. He has a lot to say.
Okay, it's possible that there's somebody listening who really doesn't know the basics on this latest thing and why Joe is spending his nights in jail and yet has just been reelected in a special election to his seat in the House of Delegates. So give us the background.
So Joe Morrissey has a 6-month sentence, and he gets to serve it by nighttime in jail and daytime work. So work right now is the General Assembly. He got into a bit of trouble by allegedly having a relationship with his underage office receptionist at his law office. She was 17 at the time. Prosecutors say that they had a sexual relationship. He denies, I believe.
Yes, he does.
Well, he said that he thought she was 22.
Right. That was one of the...
And she's now 18.
And pregnant.
And she's pregnant.
Right.
And the prosecutors are saying they don't know for sure whether the baby is
Joe's. And she says it's not his. She actually is defending him.
Right.
Anyway, instead of pleading guilty or pleading innocent, he had an Alford plea, which basically...
Which is no contest.
Right.
The old Spiro Agnew.
It basically yes. means the prosecutors have enough evidence to convict me, but I don't admit that I did anything. I don't admit guilt. So this is the deal he cut right before the session started, a few weeks before the session started. And all people were calling on him, Republicans and Democrats, to resign. So he did a little interesting thing. He did resign and then immediately said he would run for the special election that they were having.
Yeah, his resignation was effective the day of the special election.
Mm-hmm. Tuesday, the day right. before the General Assembly session started. And he won.
Yes.
And he won.
42% of the vote and about, I think, 7,000 votes were
actually
cast.
Actually, he's a Democrat, I should say, but he ran as an independent.
Right. The Democrats put up a candidate who very few voters knew.
And a Republican.
And then a Republican had a candidate who very few voters knew.
Yeah.
And
but it's a Democratic-leaning district.
Yeah. And a very, very strongly Democratic-leaning district in Richmond and Eastern Henrico and Charles City County. And he's represented it since 2007, and he's good at constituent service work. So the voters of that district decided to return him.
Right. Well, only the voters that voted, which wasn't very many.
7,000 voters.
But both Republicans and Democrats in the House of Delegates have said that they wanted him out.
Mm-hmm. And they were
What do they do now that the voters have spoken and said, we want him to continue representing us?
Well, Speaker Bill Howell did one thing. He removed him from any committees.
Yeah.
He has no committee assignments.
Right. But they were thinking about removing him, which they have the power to do.
Removing him completely
yes.
from his seat.
Yeah.
There's no question the House has the power, but there's both parties are a little bit reluctant now in light of the election last week to take him out of office. So they're looking at other less stringent sanctions to hit him with. They could bar him from speaking on the floor of the House. They've already kept him out of committee assignments. There are a number of things they could do. They could censure him. The Senate has censured one of its former members, Senator Babulus of Norfolk. The last time a person was tossed out of the House of Delegates was during Reconstruction in the 1860s or 70s or during that
period. I think it's hard to remove him when voters just voted for
him. No, they're not going to. I don't see why the Republican would want to. They'd like him there as a Democratic, straw man.
And plus, who really wants the spectacle after Governor McDonald's trial?
No.
This would be a whole another terrible black eye on Virginia General Assembly or Virginia politics.
Does this in any way give greater motivation to actually pass some ethics reform? Although I don't think that in the proposed legislation there's anything about you should not have sex with 17-year-olds.
Having sex with an underage girl.
But in terms of the black eye that...
Ethics reform is very bipartisan right now.
Right.
And this keeps it bipartisan because the last cases have been a Democrat and a Republican. So it is something that both parties can agree on. And in fact, as Anita pointed out at the top of the show, they are bidding against each other to be the stronger party on ethics. We'll believe it when we see it in terms of what they finally come down with. But they're talking about, as the governor did in his State of the Commonwealth message last Wednesday, a $100 cap on gifts. But there are many other things involved in ethics, and I don't know how strong the legislation is going to be.
Yeah, but they're okay, not.
So, Anita,
not,
we need to go to this other topic with Anita, if we could, Bob Roberts. As I understand it, if only I were a wealthy person, Anita, I would be happy in so many ways. But apparently, if I were, the president would like me to be less wealthy.
Right. Well, the president has always felt that way. He wants the wealthy to pay more in taxes and middle class, lower class to pay less. And so he has proposed yesterday to collect another $320 billion in taxes over 10 years. And that would be on the wealthy to give back in tax cuts to the middle class and low class, you know, those that don't have very much money. It's not probably going very far.
Oh, Bob Roberts, is this anything different than he's tried to do before?
I think it's a larger narrative that the Democrats will be setting out in 2016. And he's particularly going out at inherited wealth. In other words, the idea that large amounts of wealth being transferred to the children of the wealthy who really don't earn it. And therefore, what he's trying to do is to reinstate some inheritance taxes that have been taken away.
And yeah, $210 billion of the $320 is on estates.
Right.
But most of that has to do with capital gains on stocks that are transferred
through inheritance? Stocks and property. In other words, right now, if a parent dies and they have a house or stock, there's what we call a step-up. In other words, that even though those stocks haven't been sold, the house hasn't been sold, that the inherited value is at the current value. So in a sense, those stocks go to someone else. They don't have to pay capital gains on the gains that were acquired by the previous parent or relative. And therefore, that deprives the Treasury of a huge amount of revenue and passes on a lot of wealth to individuals who, in theory, haven't earned it, except that their parents had a lot of money.
Bob Gibson, does that kind of approach have some populist appeal? And if so, is it difficult for Republicans to come out against it?
Well, Republicans in the past have come out against it by saying, and they will oppose it again this time, by saying that taking higher taxes on the rich doesn't help the middle class. And there are many people in the middle class who aspire to be rich. So it's not necessarily a populist argument that a lot of people are going to vote on, but it is a populist argument that there are a lot of voters who would like to see the top 1%, but not themselves, but they'd like to be in that top 1%. So it cuts both ways. It's a populist argument, and people who are middle class who aspire to be rich don't necessarily want to tax the rich.
This, in the broad context here, this is not different than Barack Obama has talked about for years. It's the same idea he's been talking about. But what's surprising maybe a little bit is now we have a Republican Congress, both chambers, the Senate and House of Representatives, and he's talking about big spending plans and lots of taxes. If he wanted to sort of say, here's a middle ground, these aren't the proposals for middle ground with the Republican Congress.
Where are we with executive actions that the president is going to be taking? We know that he took one, certainly that was very controversial, on immigration, and then on
Cuba.
Policy towards Cuba.
I would say we're still, he was aggressive towards the end of last year with some big executive actions you mentioned. He says he'll still do them this year. There's a new Congress coming in. It's not really looking like they're going to have a lot in common. They have a couple issues. So I think he'll still continue to do that.
Are there areas that you're aware of that you think he might
have executive actions?
Yes. Yeah.
Climate change.
He's had, what else? He's had several things in the last few weeks.
Bob Roberts, you want to chip in?
No, I mean, they're fighting to defend those. I mean, the courts are going to be looking at the climate change issue. The courts are going to be looking at the immigration issue. The courts are going to be looking. So they're going to have enough trouble defending those particular executive actions. So they really aren't going to open up too many new ones because they hope. The big court decision coming down in the spring that we haven't talked about is Obamacare too, where it could gut the subsidies for millions of Americans who are not living in states that have the state marketplaces. Under this decision, if it comes down the wrong way, if you live in Virginia, which does not have a state marketplace, you lose your federal tax subsidy. So instead of paying, instead of having us.
So basically what this court case is about is that the federal government does not have the right to set up one of those exchanges.
In the states that don't have
No, they can set up an exchange. They just cannot give a tax subsidy.
They can't get the tax subsidy, and that's the question.
Right.
There's a bit of a dilemma because Democrats in the Congress would like to change and fix Obamacare, and Republicans in the Congress would like to destroy and end Obamacare. And is there any common ground there? There could be, but there doesn't necessarily look like there has to be because it's more of a political issue than it is a fix-it issue.
And it could be a huge issue.
I mentioned at the top of the hour that the Virginia economy was a concern to state lawmakers. The lawmakers that I talked to still tell me that they're concerned about the number of jobs that have been lost and the degree to which the economy in the Commonwealth has been hurt by federal budget cutbacks, so-called sequestration. Bob Roberts, you have told me off-air that you don't think that this is that much of an issue anymore because state lawmakers have already tweaked the state budget to adjust for the decrease in tax revenues. But are there economic concerns for Virginia that you think people should know about?
No, there are serious economic long-term projections. In other words, if the federal government continues to cut back and the military spending continues to slow, Virginia is going to get hit in the long term. There could be more serious budget problems down the road. But at the moment, in terms of this year, it looks like the revenue picture of Virginia has basically has not gotten any worse. But it doesn't mean long term that the state is in a very good situation. That's why the governor was spending so much time in his State of the State address talking about what we have to do to attract new business, what we have to do to diversify the economy. So Virginia is not out of the woods yet at all. But just this year, the second year of the budget, we're not in a crisis situation.
Well, there have been a few bills, all by Democrats, in the General Assembly that would raise the minimum wage in Virginia, as some other states have done. Are Republicans likely to say, look, our economy is so precarious that we can't afford to do that?
Republicans are likely to say that those bills are dead on arrival.
They're not.
Okay, that's a pretty good answer.
No, I mean, you have the scenario that the Republicans are trying to portray to the voters of Virginia they're stewards of the state finances, which means we're not going to raise taxes, we're going to keep your college tuition low. The governor would like to say we need to help the middle class by saying let's raise the minimum wage. There's a stalemate there. And it's going to be interesting how that plays out when all 140 members of the House of Delegates and the Senate are up for election.
All right. Well, speaking of wages, and since we're running short on time, let me get to this. Pay increases for state employees. Where are people in the legislature coming down on this?
Right now, the governor has said if the legislature finds the money, about $450 million would require to fund a 2% pay increase for the 100,000+ state employees, he would support it. So he's thrown it back into the Republican Senate and the Republican House. And with an election coming up, we tend to see pay increases go through the legislature when there's election. So I suspect that the legislature will try to find that money for a 2% pay increase for state employees before they're all up for re-election in the fall.
I'm Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight here in the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities in Charlottesville with me, Anita Kumar and Bob Gibson, which is different than we've ever done before. Bob Roberts there in Harrisonburg all by himself. And usually when we get this close to the end of the show, what we try to do is throw a surprise question to Anita, who's always with us from Washington on the phone. Since Bob is all by himself today, we decided to do something different. Anita is actually going to ask Bob the surprise question. I'm not sure what it is, but Anita, you've got 60 seconds for your question and Bob's answer.
All right.
Okay.
Will the General Assembly legalize the growing industrial hemp?
Of industrial hemp by Virginia's farmers. It's a GOP
it's a bill.
Oh, you had help from
I
Gibson.
I did have help. Okay. I had help. Could you tell I was reading
this
it?
This is a yes-no question.
And the answer is no, they will not.
Okay. Oh, my God. So it can't be a yes-no answer. We have to come up with
something. Let's come up with another question.
Okay, we have 10 seconds.
It's the shortest answer I've ever heard Roberts give.
All right.
Well, okay, what's the vote in the Supreme Court by June on gay
same
marriage?
Same-sex marriage.
Right now, I think it's 5-4.
Name them.
Name them?
Yes,
no.
I stumped you.
I'm just saying.
Which five are going to vote for which decision?
Kennedy is going to vote with the moderate wing of the party or the court.
So does that sounds, Bob Roberts, like a hedge, but it also sounds like you think the Supreme Court is going to come down on the side of making same-sex marriage constitutional across the U.S.
I don't think Justice Kennedy will go against his previous decisions, which have been very, very pro, equality for same-sex couples.
Does that sound like a prediction to you guys?
I think it does. And I would go on a farther limb and say that I think the Chief Justice Roberts will join the majority on this.
That's a possibility. I mean, the justice may join the majority, so he is with the majority.
And we're keeping track. We'll play back this part of the show. After the Supreme Court makes its decision and when we see you guys. But hopefully we'll see you several times before then. Right. Our guests have been Bob Roberts, professor of political science at James Madison University, Bob Gibson, executive director of the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership, along with McClatchy Newspaper's White House correspondent and Charlottesville native, Anita Kumar. Gang, thanks so very much for your time.
Thank you, Tom.
Podcast of this program available on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you'll see links to more information about all our guests. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. Thanks to all the help from the folks at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Hope to see you again soon for more insight.